Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Check out our blog while you're there, too. And don't forget all the other things that you can do there. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Thank you. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Hey, Joan, February 1st apparently is a big day in the history. Yeah.
No.
Listen to this.
Okay.
1788, the steamboat was patented.
Ooh.
By Isaac Briggs and William Longstreet. 1790, the U.S. Supreme Court convened for the first time in New York City.
Wow.
1862, the battle hymn of the Republic was first published by Julia Ward Howe.
Did not know that.
1884, the first edition of the Oxford English Dictionary was published.
Well, that recently.
1898, the Travelers Insurance Company issued the first automobile insurance policy.
Okay.
1900, Eastman Kodak introduced the $1 Brownie box camera. And Joan, way into my life, I mean, all the way into me being a little guy, I remember the Brownie.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't 1900, but they were still making the Brownie many years later.
Boy, are you dating yourself.
All right, here's the rest. 1919, the first Miss America was crowned in New York City.
Gee.
How about that? And the Times, you probably like this. You're a crossword puzzle person, aren't you?
Yes.
1930, the Times published the first crossword puzzle.
Wow, that recently. I thought it was older.
What about that for a day in history?
That's packed.
Listen, you don't get this anywhere else, only on the Small Business Advocate Show.
And maybe there's a reason for that. I don't know.
Joan, be nice.
Sorry.
I know how hard it is for you to be nice. Try to be nice.
It is.
Work with me, Joan.
I'm trying.
Okay, let's get over to, the letter. Yeah, that letter thing, the Kiplinger letter.
That's
Let's do
why
that.
I'm here, Jim.
Let's do that. What do you think?
Work with me.
What's the cover? What's the lead story this week in the Kiplinger letter?
Well, looking ahead on the energy front, and probably a long-term look at the energy front, not just the next few months.
Well, what does it look like?
Well, we're saying that utilities will be in the hot seat because they'll be under pressure. They'll need to produce more electricity, but they're also going to be asked to be trimming emissions as well.
Mm-hmm. They're getting squeezed on both ends, aren't they?
Exactly.
Well, actually, they're being squeezed on one end and pulled on the other end.
Right. That's one way to look at it.
Yeah,
sure.
It's like a taffy machine, you know, but a lot of stuff's going in and they're squeezing it coming out. The emissions issue is a real problem because there's even more and more pressure being put on right now by the environmentalists and by the global warming folks who really want to cut the CO2 emissions on every level, right?
Right. That's true.
And so they've got that challenge, but why is there going to be more of a demand for electricity, Joan?
Why is there going to be more of a demand? Well,
is there an echo in here? Well, I was just talking to Dolph DeRoos about the increase in home building. You know, regardless of the bubble baloney that we've heard, there are going to be a lot of homes built and a lot of increased population. The United States population is increasing. What I've forgotten when it's going to go to 400 million, but it's not going to be that long from now. And so all those people are going to have some place to live. That's going to create an increased demand for electricity, isn't it?
Yes, I guess so.
Well, I think so too. But the other thing you guys point out in the letter this week, which I thought was an interesting thing for you to lead with on the issue of demand for electricity, is the hybrid plug-in cars, the electric cars.
Which I always thought was a good thing, but this says what we're saying is it can mean more stress on the system.
Yeah, yeah. Because you guys say that if there are actually going to be 20% more cars on the road who are the electrical plug-in cars, that's going to increase the demand for electrical power by 5%.
And you have to generate that electrical power somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of ironic because you're trying to put electrical cars into service to reduce the need for oil, but you're going to increase the need for something to generate the electricity, and I'm thinking probably coal.
See, this is the reason why we all have to really be as informed as possible. When we start wringing our hands over global warming and cutting emissions and all that sort of thing, you know, the Kyoto standards, Joan, that everybody is, not everybody, but a lot of people are so in love with. I am not one of those people, by the way, Joan. The Kyoto standards would demand that the United States go back to pre-1990 emissions. Think about that. We would have to go back to the production, the emissions, CO2 emissions that we were producing in before 1990. And
wow.
Joan, that would be, you know what that would do to this economy?
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Well, and then here would be the scenario, Joan. The greenie that just got that done. You know, they were so happy, they were celebrating, and they got so excited they decided to go out and buy an electrical car. And then they showed up at the dealership and they say, "Oh, you know what? It's a great day for America. We cut emissions back to 1989 standards, and I'm ready to celebrate by buying an electrical car." And the dealer says, "I'm sorry, I can't sell those cars anymore because there's no electricity for that. You cut back on the emissions, and so we don't have enough electricity for your car now."
Oh, right.
Wouldn't that be quite
an imagination?
I know I do, but you know what, Joan? That's not that far off based on what you guys say this week in the letter.
Well, yeah, we paint quite a picture, I think.
Yeah. So you also point out that clean coal plants, electrical coal plants, plants that generate electricity by burning coal, that those things are still, 5 years away?
Right, 2012. So,
but you know, that's not that far away, really, though, is it, Joan?
Well, we're already in 2007, so I guess no, it's not.
But, Joan, I think it seems to me that this makes... This explains, or at least it gives us an outline for how we should be approaching CO2 emissions. I agree that we need to be curbing CO2 emissions, but we need to have a realistic goal, one that doesn't take the economy down. Right?
Well, you know, I think it's you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. As you point out, if you go too far in one way, you have problems, but without fixing the environment, what kind of world do we have left?
Well, I know, but there's got to be a balance there somewhere, Joan. And folks, when we come back, Kiplinger used the B word on their first page of the letter this week. When we come back, we're going to tell you what the B word is, and is it possible that it could happen? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour, and that's all Joan asked me for. Right, Joan?
A little respect.
Just a little respect.
Exactly,
that's
right.
All you asked me for. That and about 29 other things. Other than that, no biggie. Joan, by the way, I want to come back and say something that I mentioned earlier when I talked about the things that happened on this day. Remember the Travelers Insurance Company thing that I said, 1898?
Yes.
The first automobile insurance policy was actually issued to Dr. Truman Martin of Buffalo, New York. He paid $11.25 for the policy, which gave him $5,000 in liability coverage, Joan.
Now, this is
an automobile that probably cost him, you know, $1,000 or so. But anyway, here's the rest of the story. $5,000 in liability coverage against accidents with horses.
I'll bet they were common back then.
Exactly. Well, yeah, what's he going to run to, another car? How many would there have been on the roads back in those days?
And there probably weren't a lot of stoplights back then,
right,
either.
You know, I remember my dad telling me about some of the old cars that they had, Joan, that the transmissions were not strong enough in a forward gear to climb some of the hills.
Ooh.
And so they literally, in some of the automobiles, they would literally turn the car around because the reverse was a stronger gear. They would back up the hills.
Wow. Oh, I didn't know that. That's funny.
You can't get this information anywhere else, folks. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, and you know who I am. Hey, Joan, the B word. Kiplinger used the B word this week.
Okay.
Tell the audience what the B word is.
I have no idea.
Well, it's right there in the middle of page one. The blackouts.
Oh, I thought I'm looking at balance of power.
I don't care about balance of power. The blackouts.
Okay.
You actually say that there's a huge, this is their word, folks,
huge risk
of blackouts for years to come because of the increased demand from the hybrid cars, Joan?
Well, because of overall demand across the board and the inability to get these clean coal plants online till 2012.
And it might also have something to do with the fact that we have an antiquated electrical grid.
Well, that too, yeah.
As we learned, what was it, back in 2003, I think it was?
Oh, the New York blackout?
Yeah, the big seven-state blackout.
Right, right.
In August of, I think it was 2003.
I think that's right.
In fact, I know that's when it was. It was August of 2003, and seven-state blackout because a squirrel got in a box or something, you know, and got toasted, and it was a cascade. They call it the cascading effect.
That's right. Well, and I think there was a little bit of human error there in terms of not the cascading effect could have been prevented had people been a little more on the ball.
That's right. I think so, too. But it cascaded nonetheless. But the thing is we're going to have all this increase in demand. And so Joan, it's going to be interesting to see. But I think one of the most important things that you guys point out in this first page, Joan, is how the answer to our emissions issue, to the impact on global warming, to our dependence upon foreign petroleum and other energy products, it's not an uncomplicated issue. It's a very complicated, multifaceted, involves geopolitical issues, it involves industrial issues, it involves demand issues, it involves technological issues. It is a very complicated thing, and we just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, Joan.
Okay.
We have to fix it. I agree that we have to fix it. But here's the problem, Joan. We don't have the kind of leadership in Washington D.C., where everybody can get along well enough and not care who gets the credit, to where they can actually sit down and create an effective and a sensible energy policy.
That's sure true.
Because if they had done it, if they could do it, they would have already done it.
That's right.
How many presidents have been talking about an energy policy, Joan, since you've been covering Washington, D.C.?
I guess all of them.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them. And you could really go all the way back to Nixon and Ford when we first had the oil embargo.
Right.
Back in the 70s. And so nobody has really come up with anything, and it's strictly because, in my opinion, we have no real national leadership where both to the level where both parties can come together and make something happen for the good of this country.
Well, you get no argument from me there.
You know, I don't call them. I've told you I don't call them the Democrats and Republicans anymore.
That's right.
I just call it. It's just the 110th Congress.
Right.
Because there's not a nickel's worth of difference in any of them, really. And I know, and I admit, Joan, there are a few of them up there, and I know some of them that I'm tarring them and feathering them. When they don't deserve it, because there are a handful of true leaders up there, but they're not. But unfortunately, those guys aren't in the leadership.
That's right.
So we got some serious problems. And Joan, just so that this is another example of why I'm the king of Segway. This brings us right over to your legislative forecast.
Perfect.
Yeah. And Joan, I see a bunch of folks. Kiplinger has all these legislative agendas. This legislative agenda and all the line items of different things that could happen, and they have check marks by some of them that are going to happen, and big bold X's by some that aren't going to happen. Joan, a lot of X's.
Well, it's funny. You know, it looks like there's a ton of X's here. I wish your listeners could see this, but there's actually 9 forecasts, and 4 are yes and 5 are no.
But the X's are so much more dramatic.
That's
and bold.
Right.
somebody did the X's with a flourish. And by
they
the
did.
Way, Joan, all of my listeners take the Kiplinger letter. So they've actually seen this.
Then they should go to their drawers and get them out.
They know that if they want to be happy, you know, subscribers to my show, they got to have the Kiplinger letters.
That's right.
Stand by. Quick break, folks. 29 after. We'll be right back.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Mr. Humble, Mr. Gracious, at your service, as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about this graphic that you guys show, this list of legislative items that are on the table being debated or ready to be debated. And I think we should tick down through them kind of quickly and point out the X's and the checks. The first one is whether Congress will block the Iraq war funding that the president has requested.
Right.
And what do you guys say?
Well, we say that there won't be a cut in funding, but there will be criticism. Right now, yeah. Congress is working on a non-binding resolution expressing its disapproval of what's going on in Iraq and of the troop increase. But there will be no action that would block the president from being able to do this.
Well, you know what? This is another example, in my opinion, of the dearth of leadership in Congress. Joan, in my opinion, if they could actually affect something, if they could make it happen, and you know, I could kind of understand that. But just to be saying that they don't support our efforts in a war, whether they agree with it or not, when we got young men and women in harm's way over there, something that's basically not going to mean anything, for them to go ahead and do this, in my opinion, is just ridiculous and very disappointing to me. And I mean, they've got a right to their opinions. They got a right to express their opinions, but to actually call something, bring something up for a vote, whenever the vote is on, if the people who bring it to a vote get a majority, it's still not going to do anything. It's not going to help anybody. It actually can hurt something. And I just think it's very unfortunate, very sad. It's a sad day, I think, in America when something like that happens.
Well, you, that's right, because I'm guessing that there is this move toward this resolution because there's a sense, rightly or wrongly, among senators that their constituents disapprove of the war effort. And but if they really believe that, then why not cut off the funding?
Exactly. That's the thing. You know, if you're going to – it's one of my former mentors used to say, you know what, if you're going to be an SOB, be a real SOB. Don't be a half of an SOB.
Don't be a mugwump.
Don't be a mug. Exactly. Good word there. That's another
great word.
Put your
mug on one side and your wump on the other.
That's exactly right. Don't be a mugwump. Right. I like that, Joe. Good for you.
Thank you.
All right. The next one is minimum wage hike. And more's
Uh-oh.
The and
Jim,
more's
we
the
only
pity.
Have 20 more minutes in the hour.
And more's the pity. I'm not going to get on my soapbox, Joe. What's going to happen with the minimum wage?
Well, the House has passed a minimum wage increase to $7.25 an hour, and that's what they call a clean bill. There's nothing else on it. But the Senate can't get a clean bill through, so it is adding on small business tax breaks. And it hasn't taken a final vote yet, but it's getting close. And there's going to be a lot of jockeying and negotiating and trying to come up with some kind of package of small business tax breaks, but it probably won't be as extensive as what the Senate wants to pass.
And is what I want. And, of course, what I want is for there to be no bill passed. And,
right.
Joan, I've recently been hearing that it might not go through.
Ever, you mean, this
yeah,
year?
Yeah, this time, yeah.
Well, maybe.
I've been hearing that it might not go through. Boy, I'd be
it
all
might.
Busted up about that. And of course, Joan, is it going to go through with the American Samoa increase?
That I don't know.
You know about that, right?
No.
Well, Pelosi was Speaker of the House. Pelosi was going to have the bill not include, not be effective, and be applied to the to American Samoa.
Because American Samoa.
Yes. Yes, because it was going to be devastating to the fish industry in American Samoa. And because she has, because Pelosi has some of her, in her district are the headquarters of some of the big fish canneries, some of the big companies. She was carving it out in the beginning of American Samoa.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And but because it was not going to be good for that economy. Now, isn't that ironic, Joan? Now, who's been telling Miss Pelosi for all these years how much that the raising minimum wage is going to hurt the economy? Who's been telling her that?
And I think American Samoa is not even a state, if I remember correctly from
history class. It's one of our principalities, I guess, or territories or whatever. But anyway, that's been an interesting little thing to contemplate. Lobbying reform, Joan, plugging the loopholes. What about that?
Well, the problem is we say there's going to be plenty of loopholes left, so I'm not sure how effective the lobbying reform will actually be.
Right. And when we come back, and that's an interesting thing. Talk about having the fox guard the chicken house there,
that's
Joan.
Right.
That'll be interesting. Politician, heal thyself. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about immigration and a few other legislative issues that that will affect you and me right after these messages. 20 till. Welcome back. It's 17 till. There's Christy with the what is that famous group there, Joan?
Let me think now. I think I used to have one of their albums many years ago.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac.
That's it. There you go. That's that great band. I just want to see if you were paying attention. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I always like telling you about their website, the Kiplinger website, which is Kiplinger.com. And it's an outstanding site. I hope you go there and use it to your advantage. I have it bookmarked and have had now for a long time. Their publication, the flagship publication, is the Kiplinger Letter, which has been in publication continuously since 1923, and it comes out every week on Friday by email, on Monday in the snail mail, and I get it both ways, Joan. And also they've got these three biweekly letters: the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter for our great, wonderful, brave, courageous farmers out there. And then we've got the monthly magazine, Joan.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's a great one. It's available on newsstands. And, Joan, what's the phone number if people would like to call to subscribe?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And you're still giving them that Blasting Game 30-day discount, right?
Oh, absolutely.
30-day free trial, I should say.
Right, right.
So you can try all these out for 30 days, folks, and if you don't like them, they'll give you your money back.
You bet.
Joan, let's move over into. I want to stay on this legislative forecast for a second. The immigration issue. You guys have a check by that. You think that's actually going to happen?
Well, this one should be sort of half check mark, half cross, because we're saying that we think it's going to happen, but maybe not this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's only because the Democrats who are in power in Congress and the president basically agree.
That's right.
But the Republicans in Congress disagree.
And I think they could make some mischief, particularly over in the Senate, if they didn't want something to go through.
Talk about some strange bedfellows.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Estate tax repeal is not going to happen.
That's right? Correct.
According to Kiplinger.
Right. The best you might see, I mean, there definitely wouldn't. Now, when we say repeal, current law is going to be in effect, which actually does repeal the estate tax.
But then it comes back.
This bizarre situation, it comes back, I think, in 2011. And so the question is whether there will be permanent estate tax repeal, or will it be allowed to come back? And we've said for a long time that we think that there will be some kind of compromise in which this estate tax would come back, but at such a high exemption amount that most, you know, more than 90% of folks wouldn't have to worry about it.
Only our Congress would create the kind of a construct that we have now with the estate tax.
Right.
And, you know, only people who have no shame.
Who have no guts, because the reason it was done like this was because these strange budget rules that they have, if you backload everything into what they call the out years, which is beyond the 10-year, what they call the 10-year budget window, you can do whatever the heck you want.
If Americans really understood how Congress does business, they would just fire all of them and say, you know what, let's start over with some new rules.
Not a new
constitution, just a new way of governing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, Joan, let's move quickly. All industry tax hikes, we keep hearing about that. That's not going to happen.
Right. We think they'll get through the House, but not the Senate.
Social Security fix, which we need to fix somehow.
You'll hear a lot about it, but you won't see any action.
Not much there. Fuel economy standards, you think that's going to happen?
We do think that, yes.
And that's going to be interesting based on what we were talking about earlier. And CO2 emissions caps. Mr. Bush won't budge. He's my hero on that because he's not, according to Kiplinger, he's not going to budge on that. Because,
right.
Joan, he understands what I said a minute ago, and that's that this is not an easy fix. You can't just say, let's take standards CO2 emissions back to 1989. You got to fix everything.
So even if Congress passes something, we can expect a veto. And,
absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely. He'll be my hero when he does that. Joan, let's move over and talk about some of the human resources issues that you guys have covered this week. Employer-sponsored health insurance. Joan, what's going to happen with that?
Well, we ask the question. People may wonder why. We ask the question if it's on its way out. We say no. And the reason we pose the question is because President Bush's State of the Union address discussed a proposal that would give everyone, with or without insurance, a big tax deduction to be able to go out and buy a policy. And if you had employer-sponsored insurance, you'd get the deduction, or you'd get it tax-free up to a certain point, and then you would have to pay tax on it.
Right.
And that tax that you pay would help pay for the deduction that the folks, the uninsured folks who are buying their own policies would be getting.
Well, what he's trying to do, Joan, is get everybody responsible for their own health care, which is the way the economy, the marketplace is moving anyway. More and more people are working for their own account. They have a small business, or they work for a small business. He's trying to get us away from the patriarchal system that we had in the 20th century, which is one of the millstones around our neck right now.
Right,
go ahead.
Well, but in order to do this, do you know what he's proposing? He's proposing a tax increase.
On which way?
Well, on folks who have health insurance provided by their employer.
If it's more than $15,000, right?
Right. Well, a tax increase is
How many people actually have health benefits that's worth more than $15,000?
A decent amount of them, or this revenue would not be enough to fund the proposal that he wants.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Democrat plan to me, Joan.
That's why I'm kind of surprised that he proposed a tax increase.
But it's still moving towards self-determination for people, for their retirement, for their income, and I like this, Joan. We got to be entrepreneurial. 21st century is about being entrepreneurial. It's not about being adopted.
You like a tax increase? Wow.
Some tax increases, maybe so. In this case, if that's what it costs to get us to be self-determined, I guess I'll have to deal with it. 10 till, stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. There's the Who for you. 7 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move over and talk about, there's something at the bottom of page 2 here, Joan, that I want to talk about for a second. You guys say a record number of CEOs will leave their jobs this year. Now, why do you think that is?
Well, we're saying it's because of greater volatility.
Yeah. Meaning it's tougher to be in those jobs?
apparently, and it, you've seen a lot of it already. You've seen Mr. Nardelli at Home Depot. You've seen other, gosh, I wish I could remember the others, but there have been quite a few high-profile ousters recently. And we don't really, and the other thing about this item is we don't really say whether we're talking about ousters or people leaving voluntarily or people retiring.
Well, Joan, I believe that one of the reasons why this is going to, if this happens, why it's going to happen, is because most of these CEOs have some pretty good golden parachutes. They have some pretty good exit packages.
Right.
And as you know, Congress, in their infinite stupidity, is actually talking about getting involved with CEO pay, as incredible as that is to me. And trying to do, they're going to try to do something probably not unlike what they did with their ill-advised Sarbanes-Oxley law. And they're going to, you know, they're rattling their saber about that. If I were a CEO, you know, even at my age, if I were a CEO of one of those big companies and I had a package that I could get out with this year, I'd get out.
Well, I think Congress is going at it the wrong way. You know, compensation committees and boards of directors have the right to do whatever they want to compensate a CEO. The problem has been that they're all too cozy with each other and wash each other's back, and these compensation packages have gotten out of hand. What Congress needs to do is make sure that shareholders have enough of a voice. So, I mean, they're the company owners.
That's,
you know,
right.
If they don't like these packages, they should be able to block them, and they should be able to get independent directors in there and fix the compensation committees the way they want them.
So you're saying, Joan, a very astute and highly intelligent thing. You're saying let the marketplace handle itself.
Well, give the marketplace the tools it needs to handle itself. I think if you just sit back and do nothing, shareholders aren't going to have the voice that they need.
What would Congress do to give the shareholders that power?
Well, The SEC has been trying to do that, but has been under pressure not to. The shareholders don't have enough of the tools that they need to go into the boardroom and vote against, put up their own directors, and then vote against what the boards are trying to do.
The shareholders need a way to get better organized, I guess is what you're saying, right?
Well, and they need to be able to overcome the hurdles that are set up for them in terms of being able to, for example, run their own candidates in an election.
It would be interesting. But that's a better way to go about it than from the government to legislate how CEOs would be paid. Now, I agree that when somebody leaves the job as a CEO, they shouldn't have a $250 million package that they take with them.
Well, but I don't blame the CEO. You know, you negotiate whatever you can.
I agree.
I question why they're being promised all this great stuff, especially if they don't deliver.
I agree with you 100%. But anyway, it'll be interesting. But what I'm worried about, and what I think these CEOs who are resigning, are going to be resigning this year, are worried about, is that Congress can't do that. Congress, don't forget, this is the same group of people who passed the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, which is hurting America's ability to launch initial public offerings now.
Right.
So anyway, the president talked about that this week.
He did.
Joan, let's move over and talk about what on the economic policy section of page 3. You guys talk, and we got about a minute left. What's this talk about a widening income gap? You know about that?
Well, there's been a lot about that in the papers, that there is a widening income gap, you know, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, and there's a lot of concern about that.
Well, do you guys what do you guys think is it real?
Well, I think there's a lot more studying that needs to be done, but it does seem to be a big concern out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll be studying this in the future a little bit more. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and as you know, still a family-owned, still a small business, and it's a great publication that I encourage you to check out, by the way. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.